Dark Reef Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. Autumn Semester 2009, this is Business Finance FIL 240, Section 6. Lecture 17, delivered on October 15, 2009. The title of this lecture is Internal Rate of Return, Bond Price, and Bond Yield.
Today, Internal Rate of Return, Bond Price, and Bond Yield. I will begin with a simple cash flow analysis problem. A project will have an upfront cost of $3,500 and will pay in years 1 through 4, respectively, the following amounts, $1,200, $1,600, $1,000, and $400. And there will be no salvage value. Now, if there's a salvage value at the end, all you do is tack that onto the last cash flow component. If there's a salvage value at the end, scrap value, something like that. But here, we're just not going to do that. It's just a trivial matter to put a scrap value on the back end of the cash flow. Okay, now, let's start by discounting the cash flow at 9% to find the net present value. Present value. This is straight NPV lump sum analysis. Nothing difficult about it. And in fact, on a calculator, it's almost like no-brainer territory. The danger on the calculator is always if you make a mistake, it'll pop the wrong answer, look just fine sometimes. You got to just always stop and do a reality check to make sure that it does make sense what you've gotten for an answer. Look, the NPV at 9% on this project, if I work this out, and I would do, and just to ensure that you see, NPV at 9% would come out, would be negative $3,500 plus $1,200 times 1 plus 0.09 to the negative first plus $1,600 times 1 plus 0.09 to the negative second plus 1,000 times 1 plus 0.09 to the negative third plus 400 times 1 plus 0.09 to the negative fourth. Just run that calculation through, and you will come up with the happy result that the net present value at 9% is $3.15. So at 9% discount rate, this project is a go. It's a positive. Doesn't matter how positive it is, it's a positive. If your hurdle rate for the project is 9%, this is a go. You will do this. Now, obviously, if the interest rate environment goes up, this would be very quickly not a go. So what I can do here, just for a moment, if I were to draw a pair of axes and the horizontal axis was an interest rate, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11%. Do a few benchmarks along the way. And the vertical axis was NPV, where the origin was a zero NPV. I now know that if I do a 9%, I get a slightly positive NPV. The point would be just up a little bit in the first quadrant. And here I'm not exactly being formal with my vertical axis scaling here, but I know it's a little bit positive up there. Well, if I were to now say, okay, let's do this project and look at it. Let's look at this project's cash flows discounted at 10% instead of 9%. Well, I just run the same stupid calculation again, except with 0.10 instead of 0.09. If I do that, I come up with an NPV of the project that is negative $62.26. A negative NPV project. It's a no-go here. So if I go to 10% on the horizontal axis, my NPV is in negative territory, relatively speaking, a little farther down than that. And if I were to calculate other percentages, if I were to use 8%, I would find the NPV was very high. If I were to use 11%, I would find that the NPV was considerably more negative. Now, the conclusion here is that whatever this NPV line looks like, I know that it will have to cross the discount rate axis that I drew there, and it will have a downward slope, and it's going to cross somewhere between 9 and 10%. That place where it crosses is called the internal rate of return of the project. It is the discount rate that makes the project have exactly a zero NPV, a net present value that's zero. Now, going back to the ancient times, back when I was doing finance in college and even in the earlier part of my career, you would actually, okay, we've trapped the NPV, the IRR, between 9 and 10%. And then you would just start experimenting. We know that it's probably closer to 9%, so we might try 9.2%, and then that would be negative, so we'd back off to 9.1%. That would probably come out to be negative here too, I think. And you would just flog it around here for a while until you found exact, as close as you wanted. You're never going to find the exact point. It's an irrational number. But to two decimal places was where we always looked. And so we can do it that way if we don't have a life. Fortunately, we have a life now. We can actually use a calculator to do this. Now, if you're using a TI-83 or 83 plus or an 84, the way you would do it is, okay, first of all, do you already know how to do it? Okay. Here's what you do on your calculator. For God's sake, get the damn calculator out. And I don't have one with me. My daughter is borrowing mine for her high school algebra classes, but here we go. On your calculator, just hit apps and then hit finance. And you got all these great, great little buttons there to do all kinds of different funkadelic things. And the one that we're going to use, you have to go down and you'll find internal rate of return, IRR. Do you find it? Do you see it? Okay, hit that button. And you'll go back to the main screen with the function IRR and an open parenthesis. You got that so far? Okay, now, this almost hurts. It's so easy anymore. Key in negative 3500. Now, hit a comma, do the comma, and now open up the braces. It's a yellow function, the little bracey thingy. That's a technical term, I guess. Braces, okay? And then just serially enter your positive cash flows one after the other, after the brace, oh, you've opened the braces. 1,200, comma, 1,600, comma, 1,000, comma, 400. You with me so far? Now, once you get those in, close the braces, then close the parentheses, and hit the enter button. Survey says? 9.05. It's 9.05. Like I said, it just makes my teeth hurt. It's so easy anymore to do this. It crosses the axis at approximately 9.05%. That is the internal rate of return of this project. The threshold, the hurdle, essentially. Now that one's way too easy. And yes, you can do these. Net present values are the same way. There's an NPV function. You can just with the NPV function, what you do is you go to those apps, finance, go down to the NPV, and hit the enter button, and it'll open up. The first thing you do with the NPV is you key in the interest rate. Okay, so if you're with a TI, you might want to try 10%. Just go into the apps, finance, go down until you find the NPV facility, hit the enter button, and it'll go back into the main screen NPV. You'll have open parentheses. Just key in 10%, 10. Do you do it with a percent or with a decimal? I don't have one with me, so I think try it with a decimal, 0.10. And then comma, -3500, comma, and then open up those braces and lay in each of your cash flows separated by commas. 1200, comma, 1600, comma, 1000, comma, 400. Close the braces, close the parentheses, and hit enter. I'm not sure this is going to work because I can't remember whether you put in the percentage or the decimal. Huh? Gave you $691? It's got to be the 10% then. You got to do the 10% then. Yeah. Okay. I did not know. I could not remember whether you do the percent or the decimal version. So it is the 10, just 10. Not 0.10. They assume the business people can't figure out a decimal of representation of a percentage, I guess. But there you go. And you can see just how easy it is. It's just painfully easy to calculate net present values and internal rates of return. The only difference is with the IRR, you're not telling an interest rate, obviously, because that's what you want to tell it, or have it find. With the net present value, you have to tell it the interest rate and the initial negative cash flow. And then from there, pull it back out. Now, as far as the BA2 is concerned, you want to clear your time value of money. And then all you do, essentially, it's pretty much the same deal, except that you're using you hit CF, the cash flow button. And then you serially enter C0, cash flow 0. Would be -3500, pause neg, and then you just hit the down button. It'll give you an F1. Just leave that at 1, and then just go down to C1. I'm sorry, C0. I'm getting myself screwed up here. With the BA2, you clear your time value of money, get the registers cleared, and then from there, all you do is hit the cash flow button, and then you hit... it'll offer you C0. You key in -3500. 3500 pos neg. And then you push the down arrow and it will ask you for C1. You key in, and don't forget to hit enter there, I'm sorry. And then 1200, enter. Then you push the down arrow, it'll give you an F1. Just leave that at 1.00. Always leave those F's at 1. And then push the down arrow again. It'll ask you for C2. You key in 1600. And you just keep doing that until you've got all your cash flows in. And then from there, you hit NPV. It will ask you for the interest rate. And then you hit compute, and it'll give you your NPV. If you're looking for IRR, you should be able to just hit IRR right away, and it'll work it out for you. But for most of you, since you're on a TI-83 or 83+, I will focus on that one for these problems. And really, it's makes them so easy. Just make sure that you're putting in your numbers right. Yeah?
What was the order again for the net present value on the calculator?
NPV? What? Are you talking about TI or BA? Let me write it down. For the NPV, you'll get that NPV facility to your main screen, and it'll open up like that. And then from there, what you do is you put in your cash flow 0. That's the negative number. That's a negative number, okay? And then you put a comma, and then you open up the braces, and then you blow through, with commas separating them, the cash flows of the different periods. Then you close one after the other, okay? Then you close off the braces, close off the parentheses, and just hit enter, and it will spit out the answer, okay? That's how you do it on a TI. Now, for internal rate of return, you go into the apps finance, bring up the IRR facility, you'll go back to the main screen, and it will pop up with IRR open parenthesis. In that case, you enter your interest rate first, and it is as a percentage, then comma, then your cash flow, your initial cash outflow, again, that's the negative one, and then a comma, and then you open up your braces, and then you serially enter your positive cash flow streaming out. Close the parentheses, close the braces, close the parentheses, and then hit enter again, and all of a sudden you'll get yourself an internal rate of return. Sometimes it might take it a second to figure it out because it's going through lots of calculations to get to this. Yeah. Huh? What did I switch? Oh, I'm just testing your ass. Yeah. I guess it would be pretty easy to find the IRR if you already told it the damn IRR one did. I thought, what are you talking about there? Yeah, I've got a little bit of a weakness here because I use, for my own purposes, I use one of these Butch HP 12Cs, and I can tell that none of you wanted to try to use one of these. If you're going into finance, if you want to look really tough, if you go to a finance singles bar and you want to score for the night, take an HP 12C with you. I mean, really, you're never going to hook up if you don't. Okay, now, but anyway, and if strangely enough, though, I mean, this is so easy to do this way that it's, it almost makes it trivial, the whole exercise. And in some finance classes, I won't do it this semester, but sometimes I would just give this homework problem. Just calculate the net present value at different R's. For a problem like that I just gave you, 8, 9, 10, 11%, and then just plot them on an axis, and you will get the feel for these NPV lines, how they drop, and what that internal rate of return really means in practical terms, that we're looking for that place where the interest rate that we are discounting at makes the net present value of the project flat, zero. Then, at this point, once I know that internal rate of return, someone could come to me and say, all right, we got this cash flow pattern that's going to happen here. And I could say, okay, what are you discounting at? And they said, well, 12%. I said, it's a no-go. Well, how do you know that? I know the internal rate of return of the project is 9.05%. Anything you tell me above 9.05% is going to have a negative net present value. I know that right now. And then they'll go back and find some excuse for dropping the discount rate to 8% on the cash flow so that it's a go. But that's another story. That's all there is really to the whole concept of internal rate of return. And you can get very complicated cash flows. The one thing that I do warn you about, though, is internal rate of return really has meaning only when there is one sign switch in the cash flow. If it has more than one sign switch in the cash flow, internal rate of return begins to take on not really a whole lot of meaning anymore. But anyway, that's the internal rate of return idea. Now, what I'm going to do for this weekend is I'm going to just do a take-home quiz. It'll be up online Saturday night. And I'll have you do an internal rate of return, calculate an NPV and an internal rate of return. And I'll also have you do a couple of these that I'm about to do, which have to do with bond pricing, which is the next subject for today. Recall quite a while back in this course, I brought up the idea of debt instruments, the bond, James Bond. No, the bond, like a company issues a bond, and remember that in corporate and government debt, the face value of the bond, what you get at the end of the life of the bond is, oh, I thought you were going to, you didn't choke on that one. Yes, $1,000. Along the way, you are getting a servicing of the debt obligation. If you are the holder of the bond bearer, you are going to have the company service the debt, not amortize the debt, just service the debt. In other words, pay you interest to hold you over until the bond, until the company gives you your $1,000 back. That's how corporate bonds work. That's how government bonds work. Private consumer bonds don't work the same way. When you borrow money and you are therefore the issuer of a bond, they calculate the mortgage payments or the car payments or whatever it is with the idea in mind that they are going to have you amortize the debt and service the outstanding balance simultaneously through the life of the loan. Corporate and government bonds don't work that way. All that happens through the life of the debt is they give you money to tide you over until you get your $1,000 back. So, to start this off, suppose that I had, and I'm going to put up a 7.5 ABC 22. And I'll give you more formal notation later, but for now that's good enough. In other words, this bond is going to pay a 7.5% coupon. 7.5% of what? 7.5% of the face value of the debt. The face value of the debt is $1,000 unless I say differently. And therefore, you will every year over the life of this bond get $75 every year. And we're going to do them simple so that you get it at the end of the year. You're buying at the beginning of the year. We can get more complicated with dates and all that, of dates of purchase and dates of maturity and all that later. But for right now, I'm trying to get to the basic concept. Now, when I say the 22, that means that it matures. You get your money at the end of 2022. Now, we can talk about other dates when you could get it. Well, how do you know it's not October the 14th of 2020? Well, for now, we're going to say the end of the year. So in this case, you are the bearer of a bond. Doesn't really matter whether you bought it from the company or you bought it in the secondary market. You own the claim on $75 a year until 2022, when you will get one last $75 check and a $1,000 check. Truth be told, I think they just combined the two checks, but never mind that. So for a period of 13 years, in our case, assuming we bought this at the beginning of the year, for a period of 13 years, you are going to get $75 every year. And then, I do so hope that's 13 years. Yes, it is 13 years. At the end of year 13, you will get $75 and you will get $1,000. So we could ask, the first question would be, what is the value of this to you right now? What's the value of it to you right now? To answer that question, you'd have to tell me a discount rate on the cash flows. Well, there's no reason particularly to believe that the discount rate is 7.5%. I mean, that's just the coupon rate. That is the company's, in a sense, estimate of what the percentage rate of return should be based upon the risk of the bond. But that was the company's estimate of it when the bond was issued. As time goes forward, the risks and returns will be moving all over the place. Sometimes they'll fluctuate randomly. Sometimes there will be trends. Like in the next probably, maybe before the end of the year, but certainly next year, you're going to see the trends in interest rates overall in the United States going upward. as the Federal Reserve begins to try desperately to claw back all of that money that it has been pouring into the economy since 2001. So there will be a trend upward in interest rates. So this company might have said, well, the discount rate should be 7.5% when it issued the bond. But as time goes forward, the prevailing interest rate environment for instruments of that risk might go up and up and up, and very well would in our current in the near-term future. But let's just humor ourselves here for a moment. Do you see that you actually have a level annuity in here? Just a plain old garden variety present value of a regular annuity with a lump sum kicker on the hind end of it. So really, if I wanted to find the price of this bond, let's start with a 7%. Yeah, let me start with a 7%. Find the present value at 7%, that annuity right there with the lump sum kicker. It would be a $75, and we'll just use a plain old annuity formula, 1 minus 1 plus 0.07 to the negative 13th, all divided by 0.07. And then on the end of it, we also have to include that $1,000 kicker, which would come at the end of year 13, so that would be 1,000 times 1 plus 0.07 to the negative 13th. And there would be the value now of that cash flow of $75 a year for 13 years and $1,000 at the end. And if I work that out, if I were to work that out, I'd find that the number was $1,041.79. Nothing hard about that at all. Nothing tough. It's plain old present value of an annuity form. But what's strange here is this is a $1,000 value bond. But it's worth $1,000. $1,041.79. Why? Because the coupon is paying a little more than the discount rate. We would say this bond is at a premium to par. This bond is at a premium to par. Simply because it's paying more than it should. A little more. It pays a 7.5% coupon in a 7% environment. It's paying a 7.5% coupon in a 7% environment. So it sells at a premium to par. To correct for that, it's worth more than it should be. Now let me do this same bond at 8%. The present value at 8%, I'd do the same thing. I'd do $75 on that regular old annuity there, plus the $1,000 kicker at the end at, whoops, at 8%, I'm doing 8%. Grr. Okay. And then that kicker on the end, discounted back 13 years, $1,000 kicker on the end, discounted back 13 years. Now, if I were to work out that little deal right there, I would find that the bond would have a price of $960.48. You with? Notice here, the bond is at a discount to par. That's our term for it. The bond is at a discount to par. Why? Because this bond pays 7.5%. The prevailing interest rate it should pay is 8%. So this bond is at a discount to its par value of $1,000, simply because it doesn't pay as much as it should. The prevailing interest rate environment for instruments of this risk quality is 8%. This bond pays 7.5%, and therefore we can now judge that this bond would sell at a discount to par. That's one of the things that you can do sort of in looking at what the expectations of the herd, the consensus of the herd is, look at bond prices. There are bond indexes out there. And look at whether the bond index is at a premium or a discount to par. And not just whether it's at a premium or a discount to par, but watch which direction it heads. Like if you saw a Lehman Brothers bond, and I don't know, do they even have the Lehman now that they're gone? But that thing, you might say, notice over the next few months, the Lehman index is sliding. It was above 1,000 and it's sliding and finally dropped below 1,000. That would say that the prevailing interest rate environment is rising, so existing bonds with their existing coupon payments are becoming less valuable. They're sliding downward toward a discount to par. Well, one last thing. Just to sort of complete this little exercise here, let's price the bond if the interest rate environment is exactly the same as the coupon rate. In a case like this, then it would be $75 times 1 minus 1 plus 0.075 to the negative 13th, all divided by 0.075, and then plus that the discount on that sweetener at the end, that $1,000, 1,000 times the quantity 1 plus 0.075 to the negative 13th. And if you were to do that, any of you keying that, I see a couple of you trying to key that in right now, you'll notice something. It sells at par. In that case, it sells at par. Now, you see, interestingly enough here, it's kind of a side story, and I've seen this tangentially, but in underwriting, a company might want to issue bonds, okay? And they'll work out what they believe would be the coupon rate for the bond. And then they go out there in the market and they sell the bonds. Now, the interesting thing is that the bonds might not sell at $1,000 each because the coupon rate that is set isn't what the market thinks the discount rate should be. So you might have a coupon rate, let's say, on the bond. The coupon is initiated at 10%. And the bond sale go off, but the bonds aren't selling at $1,000 each. They're selling at $970 each. So the company doesn't get as much money as it thought it was going to. It's the loan amount from the buyers isn't as high as they thought it was. And the reason is because the coupon rate was not as high as the investment community thought it should be. So the buying, just no one bought until the price dropped below par, and then they bought the bonds up once it had dropped below par. So the company, it's very real. You want to know what that coupon rate is compared to what the market's sentiment about the discount rate should be. Because if you miss on the low side on your coupon, you aren't going to get as much money as you wanted. On the other hand, if you miss on the high side, well, that's not good either, because, see, if you miss on the high side, suddenly you're getting all this money that you didn't expect. Suppose that there had been a bond that was issued at a coupon of 7.5%, and the bonds are all going off at 10.41, 79, and all that. Well, that sounds great. We're getting more in our loan than we want. Yeah, but that means that we're going to be paying $75 a year on each of those bonds, when we really only had to pay $70 a year on each of those bonds. So it's interesting to look at the dynamics of these public offerings of bonds like that, because sometimes you'll see considerable deviations from par on the sale. Either way, it's not all that great news for the company. Here's the thing, though. In the world that we live in, the real world, we don't see the discount rate. We see the price of the bond. So in a sense, what we are seeing is the coupon, the face, and the price, but not the discount rate that the market is applying. So what we actually see, suppose And I wrote down that 7.5% ABC sells for, has a price right now of $980. In this case, we don't know the yield. And that's what we would call this. We would know that $75 times 1 minus 1 plus R to the negative 13th over R plus 1,000 times 1 plus R to the negative 13th equals 980. We would know that equation. Here's the problem, though. There's no algebraic way to solve for the R in there. In mathematics, we'd say there is no closed form solution. This is not something that you can just rearrange terms and add and subtract, divide and multiply. You can't do it. You have to estimate. You have to feel your way back and forth, trying different discount rates. Now, I know one thing for sure. Whatever that R is, I know that that R is more than 0.075. I know that. How do I know that? Because this bond is selling right now at a discount to par. This bond is selling at a discount to par. That means that $75 a year isn't enough. 7.5% is not enough to bring this bond in at par on the open market. So I know that that R is going to be more than 7.5%. Truth be told, here I actually know something else. But right off the bat, I know it's selling at a discount to par, so I know that the interest rate is lower. That the R would have to be higher. Now, in this case, I also know something else. I know that when I used the discount rate of 8%, the discount price was $960.48. So I do know that it's not quite as high as 8% in this case. You okay on that? I know that it's somewhere between 7.5% and 8%. Because it's definitely higher than 7.5% because this thing is selling at a discount to par. But I know that since I had done that 8% on it, and that came out with a price of $960.48, I know that it's not quite that bad. It's not quite up to 8% yet. So, but how would I feel my way? Well, first of all, the terminology. What I am finding here when I solve for the R is called the yield on the bond. If you go into the newspapers and you look at the financial section, look at the bonds, there will be a column that will tell you the yields. Because markets work on prices, but the underlying dynamic is the yield that is implied by those prices. So you can go through the bond section, you can actually look down the column, you'll see against comparing the coupon to the yield, you can actually see that there will be a difference. Almost always there's going to be some kind of a difference. So in that case, what's a mother to do on a calculation like that? Fortunately, you can actually do those on your calculator. There's a bond calculation routine on the TI. And I'm going to leave that for you because I'll put up the how to do it in the homework, in that homework quiz, how to do that on your TI. It's really easy. It's just a joke to do these anymore, to calculate the yields to maturity on bonds. But the main thing for today is I want you to understand the concept of what it means to have a discount to par, what it means to have it at a premium to par. Now, I want you to tell me, just humor me. The Federal Reserve is going to start contracting the money supply. It's going to have to, because we've got inflation just waiting like a tidal wave, rolling out there, and it's going to hit our asses. And the Federal Reserve right now is going to have to figure out some way to deal with this. So if the Federal Reserve is contracting the money supply, that means the supply of money goes down, which means the price of money goes up. What's the price of money? Interest rates. The prevailing interest rate environment is going to be rising. There's no doubt about that. Over the next 6 months, 12 months, it could kill the economic recovery. But let's talk turkey here about investment and starting to think as an investor. Okay, if you believe that interest rates are going to start rolling upward, what is that going to do to the prices of outstanding bonds, bonds that are out there right now? If the prevailing interest rate environment is going to start rising, what will happen to bond prices that are bonds that are actually out there? You want to give me a stab at it? You can get it. What, you can take a guess. It's just a 50-50 chance. What say you? Yes, because those bonds out there are already set at a fixed coupon. So if the discount rates on all instruments are rising, then that will mean that the value of any bond that is already out there with a set coupon for the rest of its life is going to become less and less valuable. See how as the interest rates rose on this bond, see it? Do you see how the price of the bond fell? So in an environment like that, would you be a buyer or a seller of bonds as an investor? Yes, because they are dropping in price. Here's a rule. If you're a buyer, you want it to go up in price. That's basically my capitalist running dog perspective. But if your judgment is that the prices are going to be falling, buying bonds would not be a smart move. So you would be moving away from bonds. Where would you be going? If you don't buy bonds, where do you go? There are two ways you can go. You can go to bullets or you can go to what? On the downside, you can go to bullets. On the upside, you can go to what? Stocks. Yeah, don't be complicated about this. This isn't rocket science. You go to stocks. What did the stock markets do yesterday? Damn. Oh, God. Well, it will be someday, and you'll be sitting here looking at the computer, my money's going to hell right now. Yeah, the stock markets all had a good up day. The Dow finally broke 10,000 for the first time in a long time. Well, that might make kind of sense. If there is a sentiment that interest rates are going to be rising, and that would mean that prices of bonds are going to be falling, smart investors would be bailing out of the bonds. Where would they go? On the downside, they'd go to gold. If they didn't like gold, they'd go to bullets. And if they didn't like bullets, they'd go to cans of Spam. On the upside, where if they're getting out of bonds, they could go where? To stocks. So, of course, you're going to see a reasonable argument for why stock prices are rising right now. It is an expectation of rising interest rates later. But you say, well, wait a minute, won't stock prices go down if interest rates go up? Yeah, unless those interest rates are going up because of an expectation of inflation and the stock markets are rising, reflecting a forward expectation of rising prices and rising profits and high unemployment, which will make the workers work harder without bringing any more costs to the company. The company can raise its prices and therefore raise its profits and therefore make the stock more valuable. In other words, we are seeing the shock front of a classic economic recovery that is being driven by expectations of inflation, by high unemployment, and all of those great things that will lead to a reasonable recovery until the Fed kills the party by crushing the money supply, which could turn us right over back into a recession very quickly. But that's not how we work. We work, we'll make hay while the sun shines. So the stock market goes up, bond prices should be sliding downward. Watch, and we'll be doing that on Tuesday. I'll show you how the bond prices are moving so we can get a feel for what the investment community thinks. Well, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.